And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of Awesome Mania. I'm Michael Lindenbaum, and as always, joined by your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
That's right. It's me, Ben Taylor, a.k.a. Beefy Sandwich.
You'll need to unlock your iPhone for...
Apparently, Siri thinks I'm talking to her.
So we are back after having a special episode this past Tuesday talking about WrestleMania. And now we are talking about the fallout of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But before we do that, we'll be going over some news and notes. Ben, you have a few things that you want to talk about.
Yeah, we'll get to those. We'll get to those. They'll come up in the course of discussion, I'm pretty sure. So,
yeah. So starting off, the Association of Ringside Physicians issued a statement on the coronavirus pandemic and combat sports this past week. The group, which includes more than 350 doctors worldwide, recommended the indefinite suspension of all combat sports events, regardless of the number of people involved. It should be noted that ARP, which works with boxing and MMA promotions, is not linked to AEW or WWE at all, but professional wrestling is often considered to be under the combat sports banner. Ben, what's your thoughts on this?
I'm tired of talking about coronavirus at the end of the day. No. Like, we saw on SmackDown this week, the two people that had been quote-unquote confirmed as being sick in The Miz and Dana Brooke were both on the show around other people. Miz was sharing the ring with the Usos and John Morrison and The New Day. And Dana Barrett was in a backstage segment, stood right next to Carmella, challenging Nikki and Alexa for the tag titles. So it's like, what's going on here?
Well,
at the end of the day, if they're advising it, they're advising it. I'm no medical professional.
Yeah.
What do you want me to say? Like the WWE should have no.
Okay, but and actually going back to Miz and Dana real quick, given how they've been off television for, I think, or away from the set for over 3 weeks, they went for their 14-day quarantine, which is why they're allowed to come back.
It's not the point.
Yeah. But I see what you're still saying, though. Next up, we touched base on this when we did the episode on Tuesday talking about Mania.
Uh-huh.
And that was about the weight cable spot in the Edge versus Randy Orton match on night two.
Couldn't give less of a shit.
So, interesting thing. Obviously, we talked about how people were affected by the weight cable spot.
Uh-huh.
So, apparently, after the editors had finished editing the match, they sent it up to all the higher-ups for approval. And none of them had a problem. They didn't even consider it even close to the Benoit tragedy or even linked.
Because it wasn't.
So, just an interesting little tidbit that, you know, of
any kind. I mean, if you're going to get triggered by that in a weight room, that would mean you can't do the 619 anymore because someone's getting choked across the middle rope. It would mean you can't do any kind of heely spots like that. You can't do Roman's drive-by kick. Like, anything that involves, if you're going to, like, go out and be like, I'm offended by what Edge and Orton did. You got to go, you can't just be like, you're offended by everything. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It felt like the people who, it was only brought up because it was fresh in people's minds because of the Vice episode. Yeah. And even then, because I didn't watch the Vice episode, it didn't even enter my brain.
Yeah. So. But the thing that I took away from this is that this kind of showed us the process behind the scenes of how WrestleMania was done, how it was filmed, how it was edited, what process it went through to make that determine, yes, this is going to make The final airing, yeah. So that's the other reason why I wanted to bring this up, because it gave us a different perspective on how the behind the scenes worked on this.
Yeah.
Which I thought was actually kind of cool, that it's like there was a process of how things were done. And then next up we have Bill Goldberg getting heat in WWE, but making Bray Wyatt look good in the locker room at the same time.
Good, go away, stay away, don't come back.
Yeah, so apparently...
I'm going to say that again soon.
So Goldberg at the Super Showdown show requested a last-minute change. He didn't want to risk damaging his image, so he bargained for creative control to push for the title win, because The Fiend was a monster and younger fans needed to see him come out on top or it would ruin his character, because he sees himself, or he believes that kids see him as a superhero. However, it was noted
that... If there's anyone in the WWE that kids see as a superhero, it's John Cena. I guess you didn't lobby for the win.
John Cena.
John Cena.
Yeah. It was noted that Wyatt agreed to put Goldberg over, which also gained him some more favor in the WWE locker room.
Yeah.
So good on Wyatt for doing that, because it shows that he's a man that's willing to do business, even if it kind of buries him in a little bit of a way, but...
A lot of a way.
Yeah, and but at the same time allows him to... not take the heat at the same time and is able to get out of that.
Yeah.
But then also it was interesting that Goldberg did an interview, I think yesterday, and he was talking about the change of the opponents. And he expressed disappointment, but he also was kind of like, well, I'm done, so I kind of don't care at the same time. So
yeah, I got my money. I'm leaving.
Yeah. So yeah. Speaking about TL people to fuck off.
Also, speaking of Bray, SmackDown last night, they set up Bray Braun for the title, which is the last fucking thing we need to see.
Yeah. But
that might just be me.
So, well, we'll get to this when we get to SmackDown in a little bit. But there may be other reasons that kind of call for it right off the bat, unfortunately. Mm. But speaking about people that can bugger off, Ronda Rousey did not have very kind things to say about the WWE universe, where she pretty much was just ungrateful for her time in WWE and pretty much said she will not go full time ever again.
Good. Fuck off. Don't come back.
Yeah. So
I believe I said the same thing about Goldberg. So,
and then was there anything else that I was missing on the notes end? Oh, the Revival have been given the release from WWE effective yesterday
with no non-compete clause.
Yeah, which is a very interesting thing. And both Ben and I talked about this beforehand. Now, we don't know the legality of certain things in the regards to this, because
there are rumors abound.
Yeah,
say that much.
But one of the things that was noted was the fact that Scott Dawson had literally maybe days, maybe a week left in his contract, that WWE was not going to be able to actually put a 90-day no compete clause, because it would go past his expiration date on his contract. That is the rumor for that. As for Dash Wilder, no idea, but maybe it was just something that could have been bartered, saying if you're going to let him have a no-compete clause take out the no-compete clause for Dawson, you have to do the same for me type deal. So we don't know. We don't know the legalities. It's mostly all rumors right now. So it's interesting that they got that. So
there is one piece of news I think is worth reporting on.
Okay.
And I don't know how to approach this because it's a very serious subject. But I'm going to go for the joke, because if I don't, I may get quite upset, and not for the reasons that some people think. The XFL has shuttered for the second time. Can we have a moment of silence, please? Listen, birds outside. I said silence. All right, that's enough. They only did like 3 weeks of a season anyway.
Yeah, they did. They did 5 weeks. I was actually kind of entertained by it. I felt it was a lot better the second time around than it was.
Yeah, because they weren't doing stupid extra rules. Yeah.
They sped up the game. They made the game more watchable because it was a faster pace. I actually enjoyed that. But yeah, it was definitely a complete 180 from a couple weeks ago when they said we'll be back next season. But depending on who you read from and what type of quotes that you get, and you're not sure if you're actually getting the full quotes, they suspended operations. They pretty much terminated everybody except for like key people. So we don't know if Oliver Luck, who's the commissioner, is still there. We know that maybe all the executives are still there and stuff like that. But it also kind of holds a little bit of light that maybe 2022 they can come back.
Yeah.
But it's so vague.
Yeah.
That we don't,
because the reports aren't no plans to return in 2021. In 2021.
Yeah.
Right. They're not saying it's permanently shuttered.
Yeah.
But people are taking that to mean it's done.
Yeah. Right? It's just suspended for now.
Yeah.
So it. I hope they can come back. It's like saying 2022. The attendance was actually good. The ratings was actually respectable.
Yeah.
So like they actually had something good that they were building here and people were invested in it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens, but it's unfortunate. And actually but it still stinks though that the XFL suspended operations, but they're also now the first one to take 2021 away, which leads you to believe which actually opens the door for a lot of other leagues to suspend going into next season.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, we've been seeing all the rampant rumors about Major League Baseball right now.
Yeah.
Which all of their stuff makes no sense. We've seen the rumors about the NHL. Their stuff doesn't make sense either. Because there's just so many logistical nightmares involved with this stuff. There really is. There's so much logistical stuff that just is so nightmarish in regards to it. So
can we stop talking about COVID,
please? Yeah. So moving on.
Like, I know that it's the big thing in the world right now. I know that we're gonna have to report on like wrestling related stuff and stuff like that that is affected by corona, but for fuck's sake, let's stop bringing it up if we don't have to.
All right. So, speaking of that, the Drew Chronicle.
Yeah. I was really disappointed by this. Again, I know it was affected by coronavirus, which means the story they were trying to tell changed. But I think they could have done way, way more with his time away from WWE, especially considering that one of the major promotions that he wrestled for while he was gone was ICW, which is like buddy buddy with WWE. They could have got a bunch of footage from ICW. ICW, as it were putting out little promos from all of their talent about Drew Galloway / McIntyre in the lead up to WrestleMania. So it was there for them to use. They just didn't do anything with it.
Yeah. And not only that, but they could have also gotten footage from Impact, because he was,
if they paid for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he was their champion there for a while. And that was part of his rebuilding and back to getting to WWE. So yeah, there could have been so much more. It would have been really interesting to see what could have been with this documentary.
Yeah.
It was still a good one and you still got good insight. It just got held down with the current events.
No, it didn't get held down. It got completely rewritten and made boring by yes, they had to touch on current events because of the change in circumstance of Mania, right? But pretty much everything after the Royal Rumble, right, was all about the coronavirus.
Yeah.
Instead, what they could have done is when they did the segment where they went back to Scotland, in what was actually about 3 seconds long in the TV show that they put out, they could have done much more with ICW in there, right? Like,
yeah, they could have touched more, like, oh, going back to ICW, you know, when I left WWE, I came over here, and
yeah, they could have done plenty with it.
Yeah, there's so much that they could have done,
and they could have had him talking about ICW, sat in his front room like they did a bunch of the other stuff. So
yeah, it's definitely missed opportunities on that.
I hope they make another feature on him at some point that involves his actual time away from the WWE.
Yeah. But then there was another documentary that came out, which was Edge's 24 documentary.
This, however, was the other end of the scale completely. This was great.
Yeah, I love how at the very beginning Edge went, like, this was supposed to be a documentary
about life after wrestling. Yeah.
And then it just ended up chronicling these crazy events in Edge's life when they started recording. So it's very interesting about how it was really well done too. And it gave a lot of great insights on a lot of things on how Edge thought once his career was over and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
like the going into the acting and, you know, I liked some of the shade that Beth Phoenix would throw at Edge about, like, oh, look at you my little actor and stuff like that, you know, just the little jokes and like that you could see them having.
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool. I know one thing that you really loved, and you kept texting me about this one.
So yeah, I watched this before Mike did. And I'm like, dude, have you seen Edge 24? And he's like, no. And I'm like, all I'm going to say is I suddenly really want to see ENC versus The Revival. And he's like, what? And I'm like, just watch it. You'll get it.
And then I watched it Thursday night and I get it. So, but yeah, it was interesting to see that it was actually, he had that surgery in 2012. The second neck surgery, and then he went into acting and he was doing like fight scenes and stuff, and then he went to do Vikings.
Yeah.
And he had to do even more vigorous fight scenes.
Yep.
And the crazy thing is that what Edge said was, like, even though he's doing these vigorous fight scenes in Vikings, there's no wheels spinning about going back to pro wrestling.
Yeah.
The wheels didn't start spinning for him.
Until he fell off his mountain bike.
With Sheamus.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So it just how things kind of crumbled. And apparently, like, the SummerSlam thing with Elias, you know, he was supposed to cut a promo.
And he
instead hit the spear.
I don't know how much of that is true and how much of that's kayfabe.
Yeah.
Because if he was supposed to cut a promo, Elias sure looked ready to take a spear.
Yeah. But But you could tell Beth was pissed at Edge for doing it, though. She's like, why'd you do it? But yeah, that obviously opened up the door for, I mean, he didn't openly say their name, but AEW to
reach out. He said that another company reached out.
Yeah.
And that Edge said, look, even if this is a possibility, I need to give Vince an opportunity for a counteroffer, which was very good of Edge.
Yeah. So. And he also even says it. It's like, if it wasn't for Vince and it wasn't for the WWE, you know, he wouldn't be where he is today. He, you know, Vince trusted him to be one of his generals.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So it's like, he owes it to Vince to give that Vince that opportunity. And it is a very respectable thing to do. But yeah, I liked seeing some of the, like, the behind the scenes with, like, the meetings. Like, remember how, like, on this very podcast, we're talking about the Edge stuff, you know,
yeah.
Rumors of him in Pittsburgh and stuff like that. And he's joking about that in the creative meeting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I want to keep this, like, really close to the vest. I don't want people to know. It's like, and you see the rumors of people saying that I was in Pittsburgh seeing Dr. Maroon. And then he goes, well, I was in Pittsburgh seeing Dr. Maroon. So it's like, so he was trying to keep the secret of him coming back.
Yeah.
He said was one of the hardest things to do because the internet kind of ruins everything for that.
Yeah. It's just not a day and age where that can usually happen.
Yeah. And
like MVP, it was quite funny because MVP returned at the Rumble. And up until the day before, literally no one had talked about it. And then someone got a picture through the big windows on the side of the arena of MVP's Titantron on the Titantron. And I went, oh, well, MVP's in the Rumble.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was like, damn. But what was it? And then you had, trying to think here. But yeah, it's just, oh, and that was the other thing, like training in the ring. He needed to get himself trained. And it was like, I can't go to the performance center because if everyone sees me at the performance center getting ready to return, it's going to ruin everything.
Yeah.
You know, and so now he has this ring at home in his warehouse, which that's awesome.
Well, the warehouse isn't on his property. It was just, they had a warehouse they were renting out.
Yeah. But, like, he would go there and he would actually, no, I think it is on his house because he was decorating it with his own personal property.
Nah, if you watch the one scene when he picks up Beth from the airport, they drive to, like, a strip mall warehouse thing and park.
Right. But, yeah, so they do that and like it's kind of cool seeing the stuff of Beth training with Adam in the ring.
Yeah,
because it's kind of funny, but it works out so well though because they're both wrestlers.
Yeah.
But then because Edge needs to get the real reps in comes
Beth. And Beth says, "There's only so much I can do with like a 6 foot something, 250-pound man."
So in comes Dash Wilder.
Yep.
So and then you learn the story about Edge and Dash and how after Edge had retired or going into the retirement actually, Edge had Dash's like DVD to give to John Laurinaitis to say, hey, I really like this guy. I think he can.
Well, now what the story is actually more that he became Edge's personal trainer.
Yeah.
And didn't mention he was a wrestler. And that when Edge learned, he insisted that he give him a DVD to give to
Laurinaitis.
Yeah. It wasn't even a thing.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, because Edge really respected the fact that Wilder never said he was a wrestler.
Yeah.
Because that was like, because you see that like all the time, or you hear it all the time, where like you'll have like Goldberg's gym and like somebody will go up to Goldberg and you're like, oh, I'm a wrestler and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then Goldberg's probably like, that's nice.
Yeah.
You know, because these guys hear it all the time. You know, when they're at the gym, it's like, oh, I'm a wrestler. I'm going to try to make it to WWE, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, but like that go the opposite approach, like the way Wilder did, you know, it's more respectable because it's like, you're not trying to impress somebody. You're not trying to say, oh, I'm going to be this great wrestler and blah, blah, blah. It's just, yeah. Hey, let me help you. Let me help you train. Let me help you work out, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Let me do my job, you know, essentially.
Yeah.
Which was nice. So yeah, like I really enjoyed.
And there's some great footage of the Day of the Rumble, where they sneak Edge in, and they like sequester him in the manager's office. And there's a knock on the door, and Edge is like, "Oh!" and runs into the closet, and the cameraman has to check who it is, and it's Beth Phoenix at the door, and she's like, "What? Is he naked? Because I've seen him naked." And he comes out and he's like, no, I was just worried it was someone that wasn't you. And she's like, I was worried you thought I was worried about seeing you naked because I've seen you naked.
Yeah, I like how they kept it lighthearted.
Yeah.
You know,
there was also a lot of interesting stuff about Edge taking care of the kids while Beth's at NXT 2.5 days a week. It's very interesting there. So
yeah, it's cool. And this is the biggest, and like, I know there's probably a minority who is very disappointed they're not going to see Edge on a full-time roster, but this is the best explanation as to why you're not going to see Edge as a full-time guy. You're just going to see him here and there as a part-timer.
Yeah.
Because he's a dad, you know, somebody's got to be home to take care of the kids. And rather than just hiring some nanny to do it for you, he would rather be involved in their lives. And you can't fault them for that, you know? So,
yeah.
But it was really cool seeing Edge with his kids, watching Edge cook.
Yeah.
that was kind of cute.
So there is one other thing I want to talk about WWE wise. Mike, are you familiar with the movies Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End?
Yes, I own all three.
Okay. And you are familiar with the fact that they are colloquially known as the Cornetto Trilogy?
Yes.
Okay. I feel as if over the last week or so, we have seen WWE's version of the Cornetto Trilogy. Right?
Yes.
Two movies that were pretty good and one movie that was excellent. Right? If anyone listened to the WrestleMania review, you know that while 90% of the internet are giving the Boneyard match and the Firefly Funhouse A pluses, I wasn't as high on them as everyone else. However, they have completed the trilogy this week on NXT. We had Ciampa and Gargano going at it in an empty arena match that was filmed cinematically. But unlike the other two, there was a referee, so it was actually a match. Where to start on this one? I sent Mike a message on Wednesday. I was like, are you watching NXT? And he's like, no, I was recording for Nerdy Notions. And I was like, you need to watch Ciampa and Gargano.
Which I watched last night.
What did you think?
I'm going to say this. I was actually kind of...
Don't get to the ending. We'll talk about the ending in a minute.
No. I'm going to say this. While watching it, I was kind of tired because I was watching it at like almost 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm also kind of going in and out of consciousness. But what I saw was like, I really liked how they're doing the story, like how you start with Triple H in the ring, just sitting in a chair in the corner, mm-hmm. waiting for both of them to show up. But I'm going to openly say that I'm going to be rewatching it again today.
Yeah.
Because my views on it are going to be not as good because I was also very tired at the time.
Yeah. So, AKA, you didn't actually watch the match.
I was watching it.
Okay.
It's just, my mind probably wasn't paying as attention to it, even though
So what are your thoughts on the ending?
Definitely an interesting swerve that kind of paints Candace in a different light
mm-hmm.
from what we have seen her in the past, especially in this storyline or in this feud.
Yeah.
Because she's always been the one, like in the very beginning, it truly begins with Gargano and Candace showing up in the SUV.
Yeah.
And you know, Gargano's driving, he gets out, they flip over, and then before she leaves, she gives him an item in a bag, which we don't see. And she just has this look on her face of like, do you really need to do this? I am very disappointed in you that you have to do this. And it kind of sets the tone well, because we've always seen Candace more as the like concerned, like I don't know what the word I want to use here, like what would be a good word for a face that shows concern but trying to remain face?
Well, she was trying to play intermediary between the two.
Yeah,
right, she was trying to get them to stop the bullshit, basically.
Yeah, I'm trying to struggle with the words here, but she didn't have that same demeanor that we've seen in the past.
Well, here's the thing: is when you're initially watching it, you get this image of her thing, and it being like, "Yes, I'm disappointed that you've got to do this, right?" But when you look back on it, at first, you think it's a look on her face of like, I'm sorry, I have to do this, because they're clearly setting up the whole ending with the brown paper bag, right?
Yeah.
But then when they're leaving the arena together, they're really happy. So I don't get the opening bit at all. Though, quick note, if you did notice in the background as they're leaving the arena, Killer Cross and Scarlett are sitting in a car.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. How that all played out, like, but then also kind of going back to Triple H, you know, because like this is still in the very beginning portion. Triple H is sitting there. You see Drake Wirtz outside the ring.
Yeah.
Two. There's your referee. And Triple H sees both of them come in different areas. And he goes, all right, when I walk out through those doors, this match starts. I don't care what you do to each other. And then he takes the folding chair that he was sitting in. He just drops it in the ring and goes, have at it. Leaves, and then he looks back as he walks out the door, and then match start. And it was a very interesting way to start a match, you know, in that case, because this is now considered actually an official empty arena match. It's not like what they've been doing on television with like Raw and SmackDown and WrestleMania, because obviously current events. This is actually straight up different venue, all this other stuff. And I think when was the last time WWE did this? Wasn't it like during that halftime heat match with The Rock?
Yeah, the arena match.
Yeah. So obviously I wasn't watching wrestling at that time, so I don't know how they played off on that one, or how they did the start or anything like that. But like this one definitely had its own vibe to it, and Triple H definitely played a direct role.
I think you're overplaying Triple H's role. He sat there, said two things, and left, and then we never saw him again. You're absolutely overplaying Triple H's role in this.
All right, well, that's
just being honest with you.
No, it's fine.
The main thing here is going back to what I said with the Seth and Kevin Owens match. And the Daniel Bryan Sami Zayn match is they found ways to fill the quietness that wasn't just grunting or groaning, right? There was a lot of that, don't be wrong. But the some of the things they were saying were like super fucking it. And some of the best parts is like when one of them was down and the other one was setting up a spot and Drake was like, dude, come on, you're best friends, why are you doing this? And they would be talking to Drake like, I'm gonna kill him, like,
yeah I remember that was like Drake works really worked well,
yeah,
in that element.
Big shout out to Drake,
yeah, that. I really did enjoy Drake Wirtz in this match because the guy used to be a wrestler himself.
Yeah.
So he gets that psychology. And I think having that third person to work off of worked out really well for the cinematic match between Ciampa and Gargano as well.
Yeah, I mean,
so, but yeah.
The reason why I wanted to talk about it is I have opinions on the ending, and WWE do this a lot, right? Where they set up the final time that two people will ever fight, right? And they purposely give it an unsatisfying ending so that they can have these people fight again in the future. Right?
Yeah.
While I loved the match as a whole, I was incredibly disappointed by the ending. Right, if this is truly going to be the final chapter, which we know it's not, but if this is truly the final chapter in Gargano Ciampa, it deserved to have a definitive ending with one of them beating the other one, right?
Yeah.
While I like the twist that Candice is the thing that ends the rivalry, it didn't work for me at all. It deserved to just have the two of them go to an actual finish, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just wanted to mention that with the finish there.
Yeah. So, in your opinion, where would you rate the three cinematic matches?
Gargano, Jonathan Q Wrestling Gargano versus Tomato Chompers would be number one. Um, Boneyard match would be number two, Firefly Funhouse would be number three. Okay. Mainly because the Firefly Funhouse match wasn't actually a fight.
Yeah, it was.
At least the Boneyard match was a fight.
Yeah.
Right?
So just out of curiosity, because you brought up the Cornetto trilogy.
Yeah, Hot Fuzz is the best of the three.
Okay, I'm right there with you on that.
Hot Fuzz, Hot Fuzz is by far the best, and then the other two are slightly behind.
Okay.
I'm not even going to give you an order on the other two.
Okay, yeah, we're right there with Hot Fuzz being the number one film of the trilogy.
For sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I that's like a go-to for me all the time.
Yeah, me too. Fuzz.
So
much so I have a D&D character that's basically Nicholas Angel.
That's so awesome. But yeah, so that was
news. That was NXT.
Yep. So let's talk about AEW.
Yeah, let's talk AEW.
So apparently, I haven't watched this past week's episode, but apparently it was commentary gold with Jericho.
Yeah, a bit. Jericho was good on commentary for sure.
And I think he did it with Tony Schiavone.
Yeah. But here's the thing, this week's episode, and this is the big thing I wanted to talk about AEW this week, because I finally realized what's been bugging the fuck out of me about AEW. Right?
Right.
And this has been bugging me for a while now. Right? And it really came to light this week after the conclusion of Cody Rhodes, Sean Spears. But as you don't know, we had the first matches in the TNT title tournament this week, and it was Cody Rhodes versus Sean Spears. And Sean Spears lost to the figure four leg lock. Not that Cody had been working the leg in any way. Not that, like, Sean Spears couldn't get out of it and passed out. He was still twitching on the floor, and Aubrey Edwards counts his shoulders down. And I just sat there for a while afterwards, and I was thinking, okay, this is another thing in the litany of things that's been bugging me about AEW. And it's taken a couple of weeks without crowd noise for me to realize it, to really put it together, because before, the crowd noise was kind of tying the show together, right? See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I've come to the realization that when you watch WWE product, with or without crowd noise, as good or as bad as you think it is a cohesive whole, right? It feels like you're watching a WWE product, right?
Yeah.
When you're watching AEW, it feels like you're watching four separate promotions, right? You've got the women's division being booked by Kenny, which just kind of is there, right? And it's sad to say, but it's just kind of there. You got the tag division, it's being booked by the Young Bucks. That's basically PWG, right?
Yeah.
You've got anyone that interacts with Chris Jericho, right? because they seem to be in their own little thing whenever they're interacting with Jericho or the Inner Circle. And then you've got the main of the rest of the main roster, which feels like a 1970s promotion, and everything goes through Cody Rhodes in some way. Right?
Yeah.
Everything is tied into Cody in some way, shape, or form. And it just feels like across a 2-hour span, you're watching one or two matches each randomly inserted into a card from four different promotions. And it's jarring. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's a good way to, like, the state why you can be confused by this product or in a way frustrated by their product. Because it feels like one hand isn't talking to the other in regards to certain aspects, like the women's division. That's all Kenny Omega and Brandi Rhodes. But they're not really talking with the Young Bucks, who are doing the tag division. Because you got to find ways to have things kind of cohesively run with each other. Like the way, whether you like it or not, the way WWE does. And, you know, this could also be an effect. And you said that you've really noticed this last few weeks without a crowd.
Yeah, because until then, like, the crowd were kind of holding it all together because they were just being a rabid fan base, right?
Yeah.
But without the crowd there, it's way more noticeable.
Yeah, because you can, it's probably noticeable that the wrestlers may feel lost in regards to their storylines without the crowd reacting. Because obviously,
No, it's not that at all. It's not that at all. Because the storylines are still going, right? It's the fact that... I'm going to use filmmaking and or graphics making and or... when you have two pieces of thing that don't mesh, right?
Right.
You can use effects to blend the two together.
Right.
Right? Like in Photoshop, you can do like a gradient between layers, right? Imagine for a minute you've got, let's use this most recent episode of Dynamite. You got Hikaru Shida and Britt Baker, who had a great match together. Big shout out to Britt Baker for turning it around since she's turned heel, right?
Right.
And then you've got Kenny Omega and Michael Nakazawa against Chuck Taylor and
Trent
and Chucky T over who gets to use the best friends gimmick. That's not a joke. They're very jarring when you put them next to each other because one was a hardcore kind of very intense women's match. The other was a somewhat comedy tag team match, right? They're very jarring when they're next to each other. In a normal arena, the crowd would be your gradient effect. It would be your wipe. It would be your mixing that carries you over from one to the other and keeps you on that same level, right?
Right.
Taking the crowd away is making the juxtaposition of those matches harsher. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's nothing to do with the wrestlers in the matches at all. It's the style of the divisions.
Mm.
It's the identity of the divisions. Like when you're watching, let's say, you got Charlotte Flair against Rhea Ripley, right?
Yeah.
And then they have a absolutely phenomenal barnstorming match to open WrestleMania 36. Right?
Yeah.
You then follow that up with Aleister Black and Bobby Lashley. Right?
Yep.
And you then follow Otis and Dolph Ziggler. Those feel like three coherent matches in a row. They all feel like the same product or the result of the same product. Right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you were to take, let's take Dynamite this week, for example, you had Super Serious Women's Match, Comedy Tag Team Match, Shawn Spears, Cody Rhodes. Right?
Yeah.
And maybe a couple of matches in there with people working against enhancement talent.
Right.
So
it's just more of a way of how do you put these together and make it feel cohesive?
You can't.
Yeah.
You actually can't. It's like, to use an example, it would be like putting an NXT match next to a SmackDown match.
Yeah, because they're just two completely different shows.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? It just doesn't work. Whereas to me, and I just put my finger on this week, and it's just like, and I finally figured out that it just feels like I'm watching four different promotions. No, that's a bad thing for some people, but for me, it just doesn't click.
Doesn't sit right.
No. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to say about that. And come on, man, get a better finish to your matches than someone getting pinned to the figure four that isn't passed out when you've not worked the leg in any way.
Yeah.
Just hit him with a crossroads, man, if you're going to bury him that badly.
So with that, we'll move on to Monday Night Raw.
Yeah. Raw happened.
So
we already talked about the big thing that happened on Raw with
but you wanted to go in depth more on,
well, not so much Cruise. In depth. I wanted to talk a little bit about Cruz and Aleister Black, and I wanted to talk about Bianca Belair getting caught up.
Yeah.
Because that deserves to be flagged, even though it was telegraphed to WrestleMania when she came out to help the Street Profits. Very noticeable that she's a face. I really wanted to talk about the fact that if you haven't seen it, try and track down the match between Aleister Black and Apollo Crews from Raw this week, where I'm like 90% sure that they went for like 35 minutes.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Did you see any of it?
I've only seen the extended clips on Twitter and stuff. I haven't actually watched the match in full, but from what I saw, it looked like they had a really solid back and forth matchup that wasn't just like, you know, it was better than the Bobby Lashley Aleister Black match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's well worth noting that they were making a big deal about Aleister Black going into the match, saying that for like most of his time on the main roster running singles, which is like 9 or so months, he's been completely undefeated. He's only lost like once, maybe twice. And then to see the fact that
That Apollo Crews.
They brought Apollo Crews, who until recently had been kind of a joke, and put him in with Black for 30 minutes was a big big shot in the arm for Apollo Crews. But then again, it's never been debated that Apollo Crews could go in the ring, right? Everyone's always said how talented Apollo Crews is in the ring. The problem is outside the ring. He doesn't have too much of a personality, right? He always got ribbed for just being a smile, right? Because that's all he did. He smiled.
And then, yeah, you had Belair make her official Raw debut. And then the other match.
Here's another thing, right? So when you saw, I don't know whether anyone else got this, but when you saw Angel Garza and Austin Theory come out for their rematch, I'm like, well, this is going to end up in a six-man tag. And my wife was like, how do you know? She was walking by, as I said. She said, and I said, oh, Zelina Vega's in a ring gear. She never wears her ring gear to the ring unless she's actually going to wrestle. What I didn't expect was the intermediate stage where it was a one-on-one match between Bianca Belair and Zelina Vega. But, yeah, it ended up as the six-man tag.
Montez Ford.
Holla, holla, player, player.
Yeah, Montez Ford made that joke on Twitter. It's like, what would Teddy do? But then also one other thing was, and I did get to see more extended clips on this match, but the Liv Morgan Asuka match. You know, because we had talked about it briefly on Tuesday, but like obviously Liv getting the win over Natalya was a good restart point for Liv.
Yes.
And then to be able to follow it up, even though in a loss, in a hard fought match with Asuka, which most people thought that, oh, Asuka would just kind of run through Liv.
I thought that, but I thought Liv might have come at that still looking strong regardless, right?
Yeah.
However, when Asuka then went on to get the women's tag title rematch on SmackDown and lose there as well, I'm not sure what that says for Liv's reset button anymore.
Well, it was...
And yes, I know they needed to get Asuka and Kairi Sane out of the title picture so that they can break them up and have them start doing singles feuds. But you could have just not given them a rematch. Yeah.
But then you had that still is good for Liv though at the same time, because you can tell that there's an investment being put into her.
Yeah, she's definitely getting screen time.
Yeah, and there's definitely an investment being put into her. The win at Mania, you know,
which
the
is more than you can say for some women at the moment.
Yeah, the even though it was a loss to Asuka, but still a match with Asuka that went a decent amount of time. You know, so you can see that there's an investment there. Heyman's trying to, you know, rebuild what he was originally probably going to do before she got launched into the Lana program. So that's good for Liv.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then I think they just showcase stuff from Mania. Like we talked about the Big Show, Drew McIntyre thing on the last episode.
Those were kind of with a cruise black going half an hour, it wasn't a whole lot else on Raw.
Yeah.
I mean, Was there anything else worth talking about? There was like a throwaway match between Cedric Alexander and Ricochet and Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan. All you could hear at ringside was Byron geeking out about how fun Cedric Alexander and Ricochet were to watch. And it's like, and then, what is worth noting is Seth Rollins had a match. Admittedly, it was against like an enhancement NXT talent called Denzel Dejanet. But he came out very dour, very almost embarrassed after losing to Owens at Mania.
Yeah.
That was very interesting. Nia Jax came back. And she's now using the Rampage as her finisher.
Yeah.
Paige is an elevated DDT.
Yeah.
Paige did a whole thing about passing it on to her and that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I believe it was it you I was talking to when it was either you or Jordan I was talking to when Nia Jax was on screen. I went up, the charisma in the room just fell.
You were talking with Jordan.
Jordan.
Because you guys were doing your Zoom chat. And then, but then when you and I recorded on Tuesday night, you told me about it.
She's such a, much like Rousey, much like a lot of other people, she's just this charismaless vacuum that sucks so hard that she makes the charisma in a room drop.
Now, of course, this has obviously been a big rumor, and Paige has been championing this idea of her managing Nia Jax. That make it better?
Help. It doesn't help. The problem isn't just Nia on the microphone. It's Nia. When she's in the ring, when she's like, if you watch her, right, even when she's just stood in the ring, she doesn't look comfortable. She doesn't look at home. She doesn't look like she belongs. And I'm not talking about because of her size. I'm talking about because she's a charismaless vacuum. Just, I don't know.
And then SmackDown last night was live.
Ish, yeah.
Yeah, apparently this is something that's going to happen for at least Raw and SmackDown where they're going to be live. We were talking about this earlier. Apparently this has something to do with the contracts where...
Yeah, they're WWE, afraid, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, if you want to know more about that, we discussed it in News and Notes. Go back to it.
Yeah.
The big thing that happened on SmackDown,
the Forgotten Sons debuted. So
Forgotten Sons got called up, had a match against the Lucha Party. They set up early in the night. The very first thing, Braun Strowman came out and was cutting a promo. And Shinsuke Nakamura came out to challenge him. They had a match later on, which was embarrassingly bad because it involved Braun Strowman. It was like a C, maybe. They did a really cool recap of like the first part. They seem to be doing this career retrospective on Jeff Hardy. I can't remember what they called it, but like they did the first section of it via video package and stuff. What else?
That kind of, if they're doing something like that, they're planning something big for Jeff.
Yeah, he's got a push coming for sure. Yeah. We had an episode of the Dirt Sheet, which set up next week. the other three people from the tag teams that didn't take part in the ladder match are having a match for the tag team titles. So it's going to be Big E versus Jay versus The Miz. Yeah.
And but this is just going to be your standard.
Yeah, it's not going to be a ladder match. It's not going to be a ladder match.
It's still one of the most unique finishes in a ladder match I've ever seen. Yeah.
Dolph had a match with Tucky. Tucky came back because the week before WrestleMania, Dolph had injured him, which is why he wasn't ringside for Otis' match at Mania. Sonya Deville came out notably with Dolph Ziggler. Still. I maintain that Tucker is a vastly underrated worker. He's much better than people give him credit for because he gets overshadowed by Otis a lot. And the other two big things, Sheamus had a squash match against some dude. Bailey and Sasha came out for a promo claiming that to be the ultimate role models and no one could touch Bailey. Tamina came out and was like, look, it took four of you to beat me at WrestleMania. I want a one-on-one shot against you for the title. And Bailey's like, you can have your shot if you can beat Sasha next week. And Sasha gave Bailey the look. So they're very slowly building that split up there, I think. And the other notable thing is that after the Shinsuke Nakamura Braun Strowman match, they set up Braun versus The Fiend. Wyatt appeared on the Titantron and was basically like, "You have something I want back. I've taught you so many lessons in the past. I'm going to teach you one about sharing because I want that back," and that kind of thing. And Braun was all like, anytime, anywhere, Bray, kind of thing. So probably see that Money in the Bank.
Yeah. Only then
for Bray to get fed to Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, probably.
Yeah. But it's... And I understand, we shouldn't be getting Bray versus Braun.
No, Bray should never go near that fucking title again.
Yeah, but like, it's a matter of who's available at this point. Because Roman's not going to be available for who knows how long.
You know who they should put the smegging title on?
Who?
And I've been adamant about this. They should put it on Heath fucking Slater. And they should have Heath Slater be Universal Champion. They should have Drew McIntyre be World Champion. And they should bring Jinder Mahal back, and they should reunite 3MB on the top of the mountain.
So does that mean Jinder gets the NXT title?
I'm genuinely not joking about that.
Does that mean Jinder gets the NXT title then?
No. No, he doesn't get a title. He gets to be like the lackey. Right? He gets to be the lackey. The other two can do the in-ring stuff because they can actually wrestle.
Yeah, that would be great. 3MB reunion. Two thirds have gold.
I want Heath Slater to win the world title so bad, man. Like, and this is one of the things, like, and we talked about this when we were setting up Awesome Mania 2020, right? I went out of my way to make, like, among my first four draft picks, I took the Major Brothers and Heath Slater because I think. I think they're all three of them are very underrated. Major Brothers being Zack Ryder and
Kurt
Hawkins. The Edge Heads. I really want them to do a thing now that Edge is back, by the way. I really want them to do a thing now that Edge is back. I don't know, man. Like, I there are so many other ways you could have gone. And we talked about this when you sent me the link that was like, oh, Jeff Hardy was one of the people considered to leave WrestleMania with the Universal title thing. And I'm like, and what was my response?
Eh?
No, it was not.
Is that he doesn't deserve it?
No, my response was, and I quote.
Sorry, I don't have her text chat up in front of me.
Oh, yeah. And fuck that, too.
Yeah, I mean, like.
Because, again, and I'll go into what I was saying about Braun. Braun doesn't deserve this title because he basically shit all over indie workers. He doesn't deserve to be in the position he's in right now. He's been rewarded for being a complete cockmonger.
Yeah.
And like it or not, some of the things that Jeff has done in his life have horrendously endangered other people.
Yeah.
Right? If someone like Randy Orton and Edge can get heat for a spot they did in the gym, Jeff Hardy's heat should be absolutely fucking nuclear for driving while intoxicated a whole bunch. Looking at you, Uso brothers.
Yeah. And here's the thing. And like you and I talked about it like Thursday night, you know, just when we were just chatting for a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm right there with you. And the other thing is that Jeff has only been on television once since returning from injury. So that alone right there, like take out the outside stuff for a moment. Just take that away for a moment. In ring wise, Jeff has only had one match. That alone does not warrant him a title shot right off the bat.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, you add in the other stuff that's going on in his life. The fact that he still has a court date in May.
Yep.
You know, about the DUI stuff. You know, he needs to get that sorted out. And, you know, obviously WWE is helping him for the rehab and, you know, taking all the appropriate steps to help him. You know, obviously, and at the end of the day, Jeff still needs
spoiler alert, they've tried that before and it didn't fucking work.
Well, no, but like I was saying, but at the end of the day, it still has to be on Jeff to want to fix Jeff.
Yeah.
That's what, it, you know, WWE can do all they can, but at the end of the day, it's Jeff needs to fix Jeff. And I agree. And then, like, you brought up the thing about the retrospect for Jeff, which means something big is being planned for Jeff. And one thing, and you know, it may not be a popular thing, but maybe one last title run for Jeff, because I remember, and I really don't like reading the comments on social media or on articles a lot, because you can kind of tell that it's just kind of there's the bias.
The number one rule in any form of media is don't read the comments.
Yeah. But, like, a lot of people are going, like, oh, this would have been better than Braun Strowman getting the title. Jeff deserves one last run before he retires.
No, it doesn't. No one deserves anything.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, and to that point.
By that rationale, so does The Undertaker.
Yeah, so it's like, nobody deserves anything. They have to earn it. And here's the thing. We don't see what's going on behind the scenes. We don't see what's going on in Jeff's life right now. We don't know what WWE is doing with Jeff in regards to monitoring him and his health and his life getting back together and stuff like that. So we don't know any of that stuff at all. Maybe we'll end up seeing that in a WWE 24 documentary one day, but like, we don't know. So there's obviously something that Jeff is doing to earn whatever he's about to get moving forward.
Yes.
What that is, we don't know.
It's and again, if they want to give him another run at the top before
he calls it quits,
I'm okay with that.
But it has to
be earned. However, you got to build up to it.
Yeah.
Like on SmackDown last night, right? They came up to after Bliss and Cross defended the titles in the rematch. I thought automatic rematch clauses were done, by the way, WWE. Clearly not, right? However, after that, when Carmella and Dana Brooke came up. I'm like, hey, we want to challenge you for a tag title match. Nikki, Alexa Bliss was like, you know, there's like a line and you got to earn your way to a title shot, right? So when you're seeing people just get inserted into title matches, you're kind of, and then yet they're saying that in other segments, or you see what, like, the Big Show on Sunday, quote unquote, Sunday. It's like, make up your mind, WWE, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting moving forward.
Yeah.
See, and here's the crazy thing. Apparently, like, Raw and SmackDown are going to be live, but there was no mention of NXT is going to be live.
Yeah.
So
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Give it, make the NXT cinematic universe.
Just make the Boneyard cinematic universe. I never want to see Undertaker in a normal match again.
Yeah.
It would look so bad after the Boneyard match.
So, speaking of bad, because we're talking about the Boneyard match, so Tops on their Slam app, which is like the WWE trading cards.
They're not trading cards, they're gifts.
Yeah.
Sorry, you just
I know what you're that's cool. You have the right to that opinion. But they're doing,
it's not an opinion, it's fact.
But they're doing a 5-chapter, you know, where they release 2 cards for the Boneyard match. And they already fucked it up. Because the first 2 cards is Undertaker arriving and Undertaker ready for a fight. The problem is that the Undertaker arriving card, which is considered card number 1, is Undertaker leaving the fucking match after it's over because you see the fucking Undertaker logo in the background. And it's like,
you know why I'm right, Mike? We're on video communication while we're recording this podcast, right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question, Mike.
Yeah.
Show me the physical card in this app.
The physical card?
Yeah.
So depends on some of those sets that they put in there, because certain sets that they put in there are actually sold as physical sets.
Okay.
So
grab your app right now and show me an actual card. Because this is an actual card.
Right.
This is a Magic card.
Yep.
Yes, it should surprise no one that I play Magic. This is a Magic card. These are actual cards. What you've got there are images.
So,
and the fact they call it a trading card app is real stupid.
So here's...
And I don't care if you can be like, oh, I can get this one in a trading card.
So
this until right you here, have the card in your hand, and it's not a card.
So this one right here is the Tops Now. This is the Owens-Rollins match for Mania.
Right.
These ones specifically can be actually ordered off the Tops website to get a physical copy of.
Right. But what you've
this
got
one
there,
right here, though.
No. Go back to the one you just looked at.
That one.
What you've got right there is not a card. It is a JPEG. That's my point.
Yeah.
Until you have something physically in your hands, you should not be able to call it a freaking card. It's a JPEG or a GIF if it's moving. Maybe an MP3, an MP4.
So, yeah. But no, I get what you're saying. But, like, also...
Want to pause it again for an unrelated issue or what?
No.
Okay.
It's like... But I get what you're saying in regards to the cards thing.
It would be like... Let's stick with Magic, right? It would be like buying a card on Arena and being like, I own this card. No, you don't. Yeah. You can't go and then play a tabletop game with that card.
Yeah, no, I mean, but I also think that it's a trend that's been going on for a couple of years now where things have been going more digital.
That's fine.
Because they do.
But you can't call a digital product the same thing as a physical product. They are not the same.
Yeah.
But this is a physical little statue of Archer. Right?
What's he drinking? Beer?
It's whiskey, probably, knowing Archer. An image of this is not a statue. It's an image. That's the problem.
Yeah. But
it's like pre-recording a match and calling it live. Those are not the same thing. According to Fox, anyway.
Yeah. Even though it's still...
Even though it's new product... It's not live, and that is technically correct, which, if you've ever watched Futurama, is the best kind of correct.
I love that reference right there. But yeah, so Ben, coming towards the end, positive yep. things in pro wrestling.
WrestleMania, for me. The whole thing, the fact it went off really well. I may not agree with all the booking. Yeah, I'm gonna just say the fact that WrestleMania allowed is this too broad?
No,
do I have to pick a specific thing?
No, WrestleMania is a good bright spot, especially the fact that, you know, it also served its purpose.
That's what I'm saying, is it provided two nights where people could just, and as I was saying earlier in the news and notes section, I'm done talking about coronavirus for that half day.
Yeah.
COVID-19. Oh, and for all you pricks out there that are calling it the Rona, that's factually incorrect. The reason it's called COVID-19 is the 19th strain of coronavirus to be discovered. So calling it the Rona is wrong.
Yep. I think one of the positives for me in wrestling, you know, it's the same as you. It's WrestleMania. It's that distraction.
All right, if you're picking WrestleMania, I will pick something else. I will say, because I want us to have slightly different things, because otherwise it's... I'm going to say how well WWE took to cinematic storytelling for wrestling. More of that, please. The fact that I saw Undertaker in a WrestleMania match for the first time since the end of an era match and wasn't like, man, he can't even walk to the ring properly. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it gives you this different view of Taker. Yeah. And that's
just in general, like the I don't think you would have got the same impact from Gargano Ciampa. Don't think you wrestling Gargano against Tomato Ciampas. I don't think you would have got the same thing there. Whereas you wouldn't have got the same, like, this was the only way that I could conceivably see Undertaker winning. Because if you put Undertaker against Alan James Cuthbert Styles in an actual wrestling ring and the Undertaker had won, I'd have rioted. Right?
Yeah.
You do it in a bone marrow match, in a very heavily cinematically filmed boneyard match. Different story.
Yeah. Brings more levity to it.
No, not levity necessarily, but because of the way it was filmed, it added an additional layer of disbelief to it. And you could hide the Undertaker's
weaknesses and stuff like that.
Obvious flaws, shall we say. And the Firefly Funhouse match, you couldn't have done that any other way. You just couldn't. Or you could have done it different ways, but it wouldn't have had the impact that it did on a lot of people. So that's my thing. Yeah. You talk about WrestleMania.
Yeah, so WrestleMania, it was just... I think, you know, despite certain flaws that we discussed Tuesday night, you know, it was still a very good, you know, overall weekend, because they made something that was cohesive, easy to follow, and distracting enough to just have us be ingrained in that and not really want to go away. I mean, obviously, yeah, you had a couple piss breaks, like Braun Goldberg, but I like how you just went, yeah, that's true. but it was just enjoyable, and it was also in a weird way refreshing from past WrestleManias. It really was. It didn't feel like it was a chore to watch WrestleMania. Because I remember, like, in the past, you and I would talk about, you know, how you would never be able to go to a WrestleMania because it's just how long it is.
I would never be able to sit in an arena for 7 hours.
Yeah, and, like, because it was split up the way it was for the way that they wanted to present it, it made it easier to watch. And the fact that they were done by 10:30 and not midnight was also a really good thing, because then you can go, hey, I don't have to be up to like 1 a.m. trying to watch this thing. And I've been watching this thing since like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So that's like one of the other big positive things about WrestleMania, is that it made it easier to watch compared to past years. So that's my positive thing on that. So with that, Ben, buddy, chum, old pal, where can the people find you on the social medias?
Yeah, you can find me at Bob T. Goldfish on the Twitter. You can find our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/321_TV, where we've been streaming a bunch of stuff recently. You can also find more about that at 321 podcast on Twitter.
All right. And then you can find me on Twitter at @thelindebaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions. And of course this show on txhthockey.com/awesome-mania. Thinking about the other shows that have dashes.
This is Powered Orcs. There's no dash in it.
Nerdy Notions and Powered Orcs both have dashes in them.
Well, we were smart enough to make Awesome Mania one word.
Yes. Yeah. So txhthockey.com/awesome-mania for all that. Hit up the archives. So with that, Ben.
This is me, Ben Taylor, a.k.a. Beefy Sandwich. Guys, gals, on the line, pals. The words of the 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. Hand on heart, extend other hand. Be excellent to each other. Party on non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, we will see you ringside.
Peace!